Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. Energy. Parsley, Pioneer, ask RRC for market demand hearing. The price of oil ended at $20.09 on Monday. By Mella McEwen. MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Two oil and gas producers with a major presence in the Permian Basin, Parsley Energy and Pioneer Natural Resources, on Monday asked the Railroad Commission to hold an emergency market demand hearing. In a letter to Railroad Commissioner Chair Wayne Christian and Commissioners Christy Craddock and Ryan Sitton, the two companies asked the agency to determine the reasonable market demand for oil and whether wasteful production is either occurring or is reasonably imminent. If waste is occurring, they asked the commissioners to take action to prevent such waste. They requested a hearing no later than April 13th with any resulting action to take effect in May. It's critical we need leadership from Texas, Matt Gallagher, President and Chief Officer, Executive Officer of Parsley, told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview as the request was being submitted to the commission. We need to reset the table on a global basis on the supply side and all of us working together. Mark Berg, Executive Vice President, Corporate Operations with Pioneer, told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview that when the company learned last week that crude purchasers were asking Permian Basin operators to shut in production, it was time to take action. We've studied the Railroad Commission and their ability to prorate production, he said. Berg also said that both companies have spoken with the three railroad commissioners and that they're taking this very seriously. And we appreciate that. He said it's good to have such a mechanism in place, even though it hasn't been used since the early 1970s. Gallagher said the move was driven by the massive destruction of demand for crude oil being caused by the COVID-19 virus as countries around the globe shut down to slow or stop the virus spread. That plunge in demand is being accompanied by a surge in production as Saudi Arabia and Russia battle for market share. Gallagher said that tussle did not play into the request, which he said had been at least a month in the making. If it was just a Saudi-Russia price war, we could weather that, Gallagher said. Everyone needs to pitch in to help minimize what would be the catastrophic impact of low prices and plunging demand on the industry, especially on service companies this summer. Whether or not the commissioners take action, Berg and Gallagher both said their companies will likely go ahead and shut in production, driven by the need to protect their employees and shareholders. But both men said shutting in production in concert with other producers would be more effective. Gallagher cited state intervention and uniformity in the industry's response. Such moves would also serve as a springboard to put pressure on international companies to take similar action, he said. Berg agreed. I hope this sends a global signal for producers in other states, even other countries. Steve Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elevation Resources, told the Reporter-Telegram that even if the railroad commissioners fail to act on the request for a hearing, crude oil purchasers will force a slowdown. With storage facilities and pipelines filling up, he said pipelines are already sending out curtailment letters to operators. Whether the Railroad Commission does it or purchasers do it, it's the same effect, he said. Pruitt estimated 10 million to 20 million barrels per day have been slashed from global demand, and even if Saudi Arabia and Russia reach an agreement on production cuts tomorrow, it would have no impact. With prices indicating a plunge into single digits, he said operators will make the economic decision to shut in their wells. That will significantly impact marginal wells, many of which won't return to production. He thinks U.S. production could fall from its record of 13 million barrels per day to 10 million or 11 million barrels per day by the end of the year. Once oil prices recover And Pruitt said they will. There will be fewer independent producers and fewer service companies. This will heavily damage U.S. oil production. This will impact the taxes collected by the federal, state, and local governments. This will have a huge ripple effect on producing states like Texas, not to mention the ripple effect of the loss of jobs. In 3 or 4 years, as global economies again rev up and oil demand again rises, Pruitt said consumers will feel the impact of the damage done. There won't be enough of us producers to provide cheap products, and you'll see $4 gasoline again. Crime. Report: FBI lists Sam's stabbing as hate crime. From staff reports, ABC News is reporting that an FBI analysis is classifying as a hate crime the stabbing at Sam's Club in Midland on March 14th. The analysis, according to the ABC News report, states there has already been a surge in reports of hate crimes and list of a series of incidents from Los Angeles to New York to Texas. The ABC News report then states, documented incident on March 14th in Midland, Texas, in which 3 Asian American family members, including a 2-year-old and a 6-year-old, were stabbed. The suspect indicated he stabbed the family because he thought the family was Chinese and infecting people with the coronavirus. Jose L. Gomez III, 19, was charged with 3 counts of attempted capital murder, with a $300,000 bond for each count, and 1 count of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, that has a $100,000 bond, according to a previous Reporter Telegram article. Gomez allegedly admitted to trying to kill a family that was also inside the store, according to court documents. The ABC News report states that federal law enforcement is warning of an increase in hate crimes against Asian Americans as the coronavirus crisis continues to grow, according to the FBI analysis. The FBI assesses hate crime incidents against Asian Americans likely will surge across the United States due to the spread of coronavirus disease, endangering Asian American communities, according to the intelligence report, which was compiled by the FBI's Houston office and distributed to local law enforcement agencies across the country. Community. Sewers Quilters Make Medical Masks for Hospitals Clinics, by J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis@hurstnp.com. Carol Mangum has a stack of fabric in the corner of her sewing room that she will make into blouses, but not until she's finished with medical masks for Midland Memorial Hospital. Mangum says she has been sewing since she was a kid. "My mom taught me. I learned on a treadle machine," she said. Mangum has been volunteering for 3 years by making bows for the flower arrangements in the hospital gift shop. She's been tasked with making 50 medical masks using supplies that have been partitioned out to volunteers. "They gave directions, but then you have to figure out how you want to put it together." She also volunteers at the Scarborough Lineberry House making quilts and makes clothes as well. "I love to sew, so I've enjoyed doing it," she said of making the masks. "It's just that we are trying to get it done as fast as we can." Mangum said it's been hard to find elastic for the masks. Volunteers received all the materials and elastic cut. "Taking a piece of material or whatever whatever you're doing and turning it into something useful and seeing what it looks like when you get finished is always the biggest treat," she said. Kim Modisette, the director of volunteers for MMH, said about 32 volunteers have received supplies to make masks for the hospital. She said there may be more people making masks than that, though. Modisette said that at the Midland Memorial Hospital Directors Meeting on March 20th, it was announced the hospital had a shortage of masks. The purchasing director said there was a pattern on the CDC website to make masks. "I picked up that pattern, and that afternoon, 3 volunteers and I went to the fabric store and bought 100 yards. That's a football field length of fabric. Volunteers have supplies for about 2,300 masks. As of Friday, they had made 1,354 and delivered those to the hospital. Volunteers drop off the sewn masks on Modisette's front porch. One day, she brought 171 to the hospital. Within 22 minutes, they were gone. People were ecstatic to have them to protect themselves. Doctors were loving them, and the staff asked if she was giving them away, and we said yes." Modisette said her volunteers have solved the issue of dwindling elastic supplies for masks. I am proud of good old Texas ingenuity, she said. One of the ladies found ponytail holders, and they stretched just enough to go over your ears. They figured out a way to put them on the inside of the mask, and it's great. She said they are using 100% cotton for the masks. I understand that the reason it's cotton is that it is knitted when it's made. It helps keep out the germs, and it's a double thickness. Now, these aren't the N95 masks that totally filter out everything, but these are just to help. There's a shortage of these type of masks. Modisette said they are now passing out the masks to visitors and patients because they have extras. Visitors and patients who receive the mask will return the masks after their visit, and the masks are laundered and reused. A lot of these ladies work as volunteers at the hospital, and they are also in the quilting guild where they sew at church. This is just a part of their lives, and it was a natural extension of doing something that helps. Miriam Prude is a member of the Midland Quilters Guild. Multiple people contacted Prude about the need for sewn medical masks. She said the guild started a texting chain for sewing masks, and it has reached beyond the hospital. We have given to Ocean's Healthcare, she said. Gifts of Hope have received some. The pharmacy at MMH, the MMH Heart Institute, and the MMH Cath Lab. She said on Thursday the guild has made more than 500 masks. Prude said she has never sewn medical masks before this. We all have stashes of fabric and are always looking and willing for a place to help in some way. Prude said the guild is active in the nonprofit community. When we heard about sewing masks, we got on Google, and there's about a bazillion different tutorials and different styles. Personally, I watched two or three videos and kind of combined a couple and made it for what I wanted to do and made my 24. She said more quilters started to get on board with the idea. It's kind of like a pebble in a pond. You put a pebble in, but those rings reach out, and that's what this has naturally done. She said the masks are a lot of fun because of the fabrics. I put flannel on the inside of mine, and some of the men's ones I put trucks inside, she said. We've made them kind of a fun thing. Prude said they are starting to work on kids' masks that were requested by the community children's clinic. She said she expects the mask total to reach 1,000. Unless a bunch of masks come in and are delivered to West Texas, we'll keep sewing. We will not run out of fabric, I can tell you that for sure. Prude said the guild's other community involvement includes making quilts for all new homeowners at Habitat for Humanity and Safe Place of the Permian Basin. Over the last 5 years, members have made more than 700 placemats that are presented to Meals on Wheels clients in December. This is the education section for the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. Teaching has changed since spring break. This is by Amber Kelly from Howard College. Any teacher can tell you the class before vacation is a struggle. The students are antsy with the smell of freedom, and you are hesitant to introduce any new information that will be forgotten in the days before you see them again. College students are no different. The last class I taught before spring break was a lesson on wordiness, an activity that ends with students revising convoluted sentences. It wasn't a serious day. Rather, we laughed together, learning a little and went our separate ways, assuming we would see each other again in 12 days. Of course, that isn't how it played out, and when we did see each other again, it would be 19 days later from different parts of the country. For me, this transition to online content instruction was not too daunting. I have taught online for years and have taken online courses. Beyond that, the challenge now facing educators at all levels is part of the community college status quo. No money, training, resources, or time. Fix the problem. Even before this, community college instructors have had to MacGyver, Apollo 13, or whatever you want to call it, taking almost nothing and making it into something meaningful. In the weeks since social distancing, I have seen a rise in think pieces on distance education. Maybe, some experts posit, this is the beginning of the future. This is showing us that learning can be done at a distance. Perhaps the world of face-to-face classes should be left to the past. Even before the novel coronavirus drove us into our homes, the extinction of traditional classes has been an educational what-if, with many, including some of my own campus, declaring that brick-and-mortar was short-lived. There are times when I have believed this myself. Yet, as I sat in my workout room with my headset on, Zooming with my students, I questioned if distance learning will truly be the new normal after we can reopen schools. Since announcing that we would go online, I had received panicked messages from my face-to-face students, frustrated and terrified of moving into the new medium. I was pleasantly surprised that most wanted to take me up on my offer to Zoom our classes each week. Then I was delighted to see their faces at the other end of the computer. During those first classes, several asked if there was any possibility we could return to campus. We laughed over silly things and shared Netflix suggestions and, yes, even had class. It was simultaneously weird and normal. Some of my students even requested that we meet again later in the week. I told them that as long as I had students who wanted to learn in our strange new space, I would teach. I am sure in the coming weeks, the attending students will taper off. Fewer will show up, and more will just fast forward through the recordings posted after class. It will become our new normal without us realizing it. However, I believe this new order will be short-lived following the health crisis. Like so many aspects of our current situation, we will treasure our opportunity to connect in real life once again. I already miss the little moments of being in the same space with my students or waving to them as we cross campus. That personal connection is much of what I love about being a community college professor. It is also something many students seek when selecting a community college as their first higher education step. I doubt we will bid that farewell once this is all over. Technology will return to being a tool, not our only option. In the meantime, it's important for teachers to keep in touch with our students and find new ways to connect with them, if for nothing else than to provide them with a lifeline to their education. My 9-year-old son, who is not the biggest fan of school, has delighted in his meetings with his class and dyslexia teacher. As parents, we should encourage our children to take advantage of these interactions and attempt, as best we can, to keep them on some sort of schedule. But don't feel like you must occupy every moment of their day with learning. I won't pretend we have a magnificent color-coded chart. We also may have had cookies for breakfast one day last week. Despite that, I have seen my kids and students find reprieve in the structure of schoolwork. Finally, for all the students out there, are any age, know your teachers miss you and are still championing your success. We're just a little further away. Amber Kelly is an associate professor at Howard College and a doctoral candidate at Texas Tech.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 31st, 2020, front page. District Attorney Prepared to Enhance Crimes During Disaster Declaration by Royal McGregor. rmcgregor@oaoa.com. For the first time, Ector County District Attorney Bobby Bland has had to implement a Texas penal code that he said his office hasn't previously used. Texas Penal Code 12.50 details increased punishment for the next higher category of offense if the offense was committed in an area that was declared a state of disaster by the President of the United States, Governor, or presiding officer of the governing body of a political subdivision. According to the Texas.public.law website, offenses that can increase in punishment are assault, arson, robbery, burglary, burglary of a coin-operated or coin collection machines, burglary of vehicles, criminal trespass, and theft. Texas Penal Code 12.50 went into effect when Governor Greg Abbott inked a disaster declaration on March 13th, while Odessa Mayor David Turner signed his on March 18th. Bobby Bland said law enforcement can increase punishment for those particular charges immediately, while the district attorney's office can also pursue increased punishment. "I want to make this clear," Bland said. "If you commit one of these crimes in Ector County during this time, you can be enhanced. We reserve the right to enhance every single one of them. More than ever, this isn't the time to go around committing crimes in Ector County." On March 19th and March 22nd, respectively, Mark Marichalar Holguin and Luis Manuel Mendoza Jr. were each charged with robbery, which is normally a second-degree felony. Marichalar Holguin, 31, stole nearly $1,400 worth of merchandise from Dillard's at the Music City Mall, an Odessa Police Department affidavit detailed. While Marichalar Holguin was being escorted to the mall security office, he reportedly pushed a mall security guard and attempted to flee the scene with his stolen merchandise. He dropped the merchandise during the assault and fled the scene prior to the police arrival. Marichalar Holguin was later arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Tuesday. In the final note of his affidavit, it details, during the time when the offense of robbery, F2, was committed on 3/19/2020, that the state of Texas was under a declaration of a state of disaster. Due to this, the robbery F2 charge was enhanced to robbery F1 as per Texas Penal Code 12.50. Mendoza, 19, reportedly stole two Tallboy beers around 7:53 p.m. March 22nd from Lowe's Grocery Store, located at 826 West Clements Street. As Mendoza concealed the two beers in his front pockets, he attempted to walk to the exit door and made no attempt to pay, an OPD affidavit detailed. Mendoza was stopped by the store manager, identified as Rebecca Malone, at the exit doors, and she asked Mendoza to take the beers out of his pockets. The beer was weighing down his pants, which caused them to fall to his ankles and expose his blue underwear. Mendoza reportedly pushed Malone, which caused her to fall backward on the ground, and he took off running. Mendoza was arrested near the intersection of Lindbergh and Clifford with an odor of an alcoholic beverage coming from his breath. He also had glassy eyes, slurred speech, and was unsteady on his feet. Mendoza was charged with robbery, a second-degree felony, and public intoxication. Mendoza has one bond totaling $25,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon, jail records show. Marichalar Holguin had two bonds totaling $50,500 and posted bail on Tuesday. Though Mendoza wasn't initially charged with an enhanced robbery charge, Bland said the district attorney's office can pursue the enhancement to a first-degree felony while Texas is under a disaster declaration. Anybody that commits a crime in Ector County while we are declared in a disaster area is subject to being charged one degree higher, Bland said. Shelter in place. Mayor, county judge take COVID stands. Doctor addresses low test numbers in Ector County. By Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. Odessa Mayor David Turner ordered a limited shelter-in-place Monday that will affect non-essential businesses, and Ector County Judge Debbie Hay declared a disaster as the eighth case of coronavirus hit Ector County. Turner, who could have signed the order himself, chose to have an emergency city council meeting to include city council in the process. City council passed the order unanimously at the Odessa Fire Rescue Central Station after MCH CEO and President Russell Tippin spoke, along with other medical officials, regarding the coronavirus. Tippin said that there are three positive cases at Medical Center, which are part of the overall eight. Dr. Timothy Benton said that although the hospitals are doing fine now, the virus has the potential to overwhelm the medical system. Benton said that there are very limited options of treating COVID-19, and the medications that are potentially available are not proven to be useful. He said that is why it is so important to stay away from the virus, mentioning social distancing and isolating at the community level is most important. Odessa Regional Medical Center CEO Stacy Brown said that they have 5 positive confirmed cases. As of Monday, they had tested 37 people and 26 of those are still pending. Some of those have been pending for over a week, she said. She said that 2 of those who have tested positive are currently on a ventilator. Tippin clarified that if people think they have the virus, they should go to the urgent care centers to keep the emergency room from overflowing. If you think you got it or you don't have a primary care physician, but you're looking to get examined, we recommend choosing an urgent care center, he said. ORMC Chief Medical Officer Rohit Saravanan said that ORMC has an outpatient testing facility, but that they require a doctor's order and follow CDC criteria. He added that testing was low in Ector County because there was a shortage of the medium used as part of the tests, but that now there are alternatives to that specific medium. Brown added that 80% of people who get the virus will be fine, but if that 80% doesn't stay home, then the virus will spread much quicker and farther than it needs to. She added that if citizens can work from home, then they should, and only those with essential jobs should go out. Turner's order distinguishes essential and non-essential businesses. Non-essential personal service businesses are listed in the order and include, but are not limited to, hair and nail salons, barbershops, tattoo parlors, piercing businesses, tanning salons, hair removal waxing businesses, gym facilities, fitness centers, and massage parlors. Non-essential retail establishments are listed as commercial amusement facilities, entertainment venues, game rooms, park equipment, and pavilions. The City of Odessa's Reuben Pier Memorial Skate Park, Ratliff Ranch Golf Links Golf Course. All other golf courses should restrict to 1 person per cart, prevent people from having contact with flag, hole pins, and ensure people follow social distancing guidelines. Group meeting spaces are also listed as non-essential, such as meeting rooms, ballrooms, conference centers, or event spaces operated by multifamily apartment complexes or hotels. Turner also said that he is talking with grocery stores to limit the amount of people allowed in at one time. Turner added that there is currently no curfew enacted, but will rely mostly on citizens' actions. If we see people out not practicing 6 foot, gathering in groups of 10, he said, if you're gathering in a group of 10 and you are caught, it could cost you $1,000 or 180 days in jail. He added that he didn't want it to come to that, but that it is written in the order. Turner said that no more than 10 people rule applies to churches as well as child care facilities while maintaining social distancing. He said that he doesn't want to have to shut down like Lubbock has and wants the community to follow the guidelines and rules to keep the medical facilities from being overwhelmed. During a press conference, Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes put in place a declaration of local disaster and said, individuals may leave their residence only to perform essential activities. Essential services means all services needed to ensure the continuing operation of government agencies and provide for health, safety, and welfare of the public, she said. A list of essential businesses is outlined in the declaration. The declaration comes after Governor Abbott's but will add the definition of essential and non-essential businesses outlined in the Ector County Declaration. Earlier in the day, Turner had said that essential workers would not have to put stickers on their windshields or carry permits of their jobs. Russell Tippin said after the press conference that they are going to start having daily briefings starting at 3 p.m. today at the Hetzler Building at MCH for updates regarding COVID-19. The Ector County Declaration of Local Disaster can be found at https://tinyurl.com/vdcp5bt. A copy of the City of Odessa's Shelter in Place can be found at https://tinyurl.com/wm967pp. City Spokeswoman's Job Has Been a Roller Coaster by Michael Merlo, MMERLO at OAOA.com. City of Odessa Public Information Officer Devin Sanchez hasn't had time to decorate her office, but she has the essentials. There is nothing on her wall except for a mirror. It has been a roller coaster, she said. Sanchez has two phones that are both about dead by the end of the day. Her job is to communicate with the media and the public about city plans, events, and crisis. During the last few weeks, Sanchez has been the main source for the county's information regarding coronavirus. She has to accept all questions, disperse them to the correct city, county, and hospital officials, and wait for those officials to review those answers before she can put out a press release. The coronavirus isn't Sanchez's only time informing the public during a crisis. In her first month as the PIO, she was tasked with releasing information regarding the tragic events that occurred on August 31st, 2019, when gunman Seth Ator went on a shooting spree in the area. Sanchez, 30, is from Midland and went to Midland High School and graduated from Texas Tech with a degree in mass communications. Being a typical kid from this area, Sanchez said she remembered everyone in high school saying they were going to leave the Permian Basin and never come back. Growing up in Midland, she said there was always a rivalry between the two cities, but now Odessa feels more like home, more than Midland ever really did, she said. This whole area is home, she said. We're a little bit proud and we're a little bit tough. I think it just comes from growing up in a place where it's dirt and it's wind, and sometimes the times are really good and sometimes the times are really bad, so you have to be resilient. Sanchez's first job in media was with the student newspaper at Texas Tech University as a lifestyles reporter covering events, student organizations, and penning profiles. When she came home for Christmas break her senior year of college, she marched into the CBS 7 office in Odessa and said, "This is what I want to do with my life, so can you put me to work?" She worked for free, she said, and didn't get student credit, but the experience helped her to get a foot in the door as a TV reporter. After she graduated college, she applied to TV jobs all over the country and heard a lot of no's. She emailed KWEW9 consistently and got a call back. She took the job at Channel 9, and that's how she ended up back in Odessa, later taking a job at CBS 7. Sanchez said she always liked telling stories. As a child, she said she used to sit down at the coffee table with a news report for when her father came home from work. I'd have like a stack of papers, and I would give him the news, and it was just like what my mom and I did that day, she said. She'd make a script, and she'd mimic an anchor. I remember watching the news, being young and watching the news and seeing these things unfold. Sanchez worked as a reporter for more than 7 years. Now she tries to use those tools in her current job. The change came when she needed one. She said she was going to work at 11 p.m. and leaving at around 8 a.m. When I would get home, my daughter was awake, she said. It takes a toll on you to be that exhausted all the time. Sanchez took the job as the director of communications because her plan was to tell the city's story and to be able to have a normal schedule. Odessa had just gone through so many changes in the past couple of years, she said. I watched them unfold and even told about some of those unfolding. Her current job has given her a great opportunity to tell stories that aren't being told. I love my job, she said. I know sometimes it's hard and there are things that happen that can make it look like things aren't going too great, but I really do believe in local government. I think it's important because we're the ones who really interact with the residents in a more personal and intimate level than any other level of government does. I truly believe that the taxpayers are our bosses. I truly feel like we have to listen to them. Sanchez said she's learned a lot about how the city works as part of her job, but when she's not working, she likes to be with her daughter and hopes that she can teach her that just because maybe you've had a little bit of struggle or had to overcome some things doesn't mean that you have to stay stuck in a bad situation or that you won't overcome it. You can and you will, she said. Quick hits. COVID-19 cases. The Texas Department of State Health Services website offers numbers updated noon daily on cases of COVID-19 coronavirus confirmed cases in Texas. Reported data is current as of 8 p.m. the previous day. As of 8 p.m. Monday, it showed 35,880 tested statewide, and there were total Texas positive cases, 2,877, total Texas deaths, 38. 124 Texas counties had positive cases of COVID-19. Midland County had 11 confirmed cases and has reported one death. Crane County had one. Dallas County had 468. There are 7 reported confirmed cases in Ector, although the Ector County Health Department was aware of 86 people being tested as of 8:51 a.m. Monday. Many Texas cities and counties have issued shelter-in-place orders, including Waco, Dallas, Hidalgo County, and others. In the United States, the CDC.gov site showed 140,904 total cases and 2,405 deaths as of 4 p.m. Monday. The data includes both confirmed and presumptive positive cases of COVID-19. Visit the Texas site at dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Student Parade. Midland College pre-K teachers and staff has scheduled a student parade at 3:30 p.m. today at Helen L. Greathouse Children's Center, 3600 North Garfield, Midland. As the Helen L. Greathouse Children's Center, Manor Park Community Children's Center, and the Pre-K Academy remain closed, teachers, staff, and students are taking a new approach to see and interact with their children. For more information, call Tanya Price Franz at 432-813-1536 or email tprice@midland.edu. On the net, midland.edu. Volunteer training. CASA of the Permian Basin Area Incorporated has scheduled a new volunteer training from 5:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. today at Zoom, a web conferencing. The event also includes 3 other sessions at the same time on Thursday, April 7th and April 9th. Register in advance for this meeting. https://us04web.zoom.us/meeting/register. After registering, you will receive a confirmation email containing information about joining the meeting. For more information, call 432-248-4900. On the net, tinyurl.com/S7CVVKT from Staff Reports. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. Page 2, read, OAOA.com. Boys and girls clubs of the Permian Basin hit hard during coronavirus outbreak. By Sam Waller, S-W-A-L-L-E-R at OAOA.com. Among local organizations that have been forced to completely rearrange their normal mode of operation because of the coronavirus pandemic, Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin may be one of the hardest hit. Half of their 6 locations have been closed indefinitely, with the remaining 3 offering extremely limited services, Executive Director David Chancellor said. We're going to be open at one location in West Odessa, the Headley Club, 1476 North Knox Avenue, the Wilkerson Club in Odessa, 800 East 13th Street, and the Taylor Park Club in Midland, 1321 South Good Street, Chancellor said. On a very limited basis, we're going to help our first responders with child care. We're using extreme protocols, and we're going to try to be there for first responders. Those locations will also serve as distribution sites for the Food to Kids program, a partnership with the West Texas Food Bank, from 4 to 7 p.m. on Fridays. If they have children and need food over the weekend, they will drive through and open their trunk, Chancellor said. We will put it in their trunk and they will drive away. All other services are closed to club members for the foreseeable future. Chancellor said the clubs are soon to be faced with a host of problems. We are going to get crushed pretty soon, he said. I call it the triple tsunami, the pandemic, the oil prices, and the market crash. Everyone's going to be impacted. Because we receive so little government funding, we're more dependent on the community. Some nonprofits will get a lot of government funding. Some won't get any. When we come out of this, we want to keep operating. We're having to make drastic cuts right now proactively. We're going to go to a bare-bones staff. In the Permian Basin, we have 90 employees. Then you have the question of when you go to reopen, are they going to be there in 3 months or through the summer? You don't know. Chancellor said Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin receives just 4% of its funding from government agencies. Among activities canceled because of the outbreak are the Spring Volleyball and Flag Football Leagues. Our sports leagues are canceled, and that revenue, he said. Our $20 per month membership fee may not seem a lot, but at $15,000 a month, it's a lot of money. In a lot of ways, we're going through exactly what the oil service companies are about to go through. Also canceled were 2 major fundraisers scheduled for May 7th. The Breakfast with Champions in Odessa and the Greatest Show on Earth Gala in Midland. We had to pay deposits that are non-refundable, Chancellor said. Since we're not going to have the fundraiser, we had to offer to return any monies that were donated. We had to offer that. Some have said they want it back. Some have said, no, we can keep it. Chancellor said the situation calls for even more fiscal responsibility and belt tightening. We hope we are going to be very good stewards of our monies, and we are going into survival mode, he said. All the sources of our revenue are going to be cut. United Way is going to be really tough. Our foundations that are portfolios have fallen. Our government grants, the little we have, are performance-based grants. If you're not serving 900 kids a day, you're not going to get reimbursed for those expenses. Compounding matters, Chancellor said, is such programs will become more in demand. The thing about the nonprofits is the need in the coming months is going to be greater, he said. I've never been through a pandemic, and I've never seen where the oil and the markets altogether take a hit. It's a challenging time. I'm less worried about the pandemic, more about the long-term economy. The world economy, the national economy, and our local economy, all those factors. I'm not trying to be a doomsayer. We're tough. We're going to make it through it, but these are challenging times right now. Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin. Names in the news. Honor. Alpine, Sel Ross junior guard Tristan Leacone tacked on two more season accolades after being named to the National Association of Basketball Coaches, NABC, West Second Team, and D3Hoops.com, All South Region Second Team. Earlier accomplishments from the 2019-2020 season include ASC West Division Player of the Year, All-Conference Team, and All-West Division First Team. The El Paso native led the Lobos to a West Division title, averaging 19.3 points per game, ranking fifth in the ASC, along with 53 steals, which is fourth. He also recorded 5.5 rebounds per game with 80 assists and shot 40.9% from three-point range. Leacone broke his career best for points in a game three times during the 2019-2020 season. His earlier best of 25 in 2018-2019 was broken after a 32-point performance against Colorado College on November 29, 2019. He then broke it again with 33 against Mary Hardin Baylor on February 6th, before making history again 2 days later with 34 against Concordia. He joined the 1,000-point club in his Sel Ross career with a 21-point performance on January 25th against University of the Ozarks. Pitcher of the Week. Alpine softball's Jody Vaughn earned her second ASC West Pitcher of the Week honor in an announcement made March 16th by the conference office. The right-hander appeared in all three games played recently in Tucson, picking up two wins and a save. She pitched 16 shutout innings, allowing 9 hits, striking out 11 and walking just one. Her first win came in a 2-0 win against Baldwin Wallace on March 10th. She went a complete 7 innings on 3 hits, struck out 5 and walked one. Vaughn later pitched in relief the same day in a 6-5 win against Bethany Lutheran. She picked up a save after throwing the final 4 innings, giving up 2 hits and struck out 3. Vaughn was back in the circle the next day in a start against Roosevelt University. She pitched a complete 5 innings, surrendering 3 hits and striking out 4 in a 9-0 win. This is her second Pitcher of the Week award of the season. The Andrews native threw a 5-inning no-hitter in Game 1 of a doubleheader against Austin College on February 9th. She racked up 10 strikeouts while only walking 2 in the 11-0 win. It was the first no-hitter in program history since the Lady Lobos joined the American Southwest Conference in 1999. O.A. Life at OAOA.com. Mini Mester. Midland College is offering a special 5-week session targeted for high school juniors and seniors, as well as current university and college students. The special session enables students to earn up to 4 hours of college credit fast. The session begins on April 14th and ends on May 15th. All classes will be offered online and include courses in art appreciation, English, music appreciation, Spanish, math, government, history, kinesiology, psychology, public speaking, and medical terminology. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we realize students are having to stay home for the rest of the spring semester, so we wanted to offer them an opportunity to gain some college hours, said Dr. Damon Kennedy, MC Vice President of Instructional Services. There are also students who may have planned to work this summer and are now unable to find jobs. Midland College offers courses at a much lower cost than the equivalent courses at 4-year universities. For these reasons, we are offering this special opportunity in the midst of all this uncertainty. Even if students are enrolled in another college or university, they are still welcome to take advantage of this special opportunity. In addition, Midland College is offering a $100 scholarship to students who enroll in the special 5-week term by April 6th and whose permanent address is in Midland County. Students do not need to apply for the scholarship. It will be awarded automatically. On the net, midland.edu/5-week-course. Parking Lot Worship Night. The Ector County Coliseum has scheduled a Parking Lot Worship Night by Radio Band Streaming, TBA, at 7:30 p.m. April 1st at the Coliseum Parking Lot, 4201 North Andrews Highway. Remain in your vehicles in obedience of the CDC guidelines. Live music will also be presented by radio. On the net, tinyurl.com/r84fy43. Family Encourages Others Through Music on Facebook by Ruth Campbell, rcampbell@oaoa.com. Being a family of musicians, the Bakers, Eric, Emily, and their 3 daughters, have been posting songs of encouragement on Facebook in the COVID-19 era. The postings are on Emily's page. Eric Baker is Department Chair of Visual and Performing Arts at OC, and Emily is a singer. Their daughters also sing. "It's something that's actually been on my heart to do for a while," Emily said. "We just love to sing together, the family, and it's something I've considered doing. But since we've ended up with all of this extra time at home with the family, which we don't normally have, it just crossed my mind one day that this would be a way we could encourage people. Everyone has their own gifting that they can use to encourage people, especially through the use of the internet, when people are quarantined, and this just seemed like a way that we could hopefully just bring a little bit of light and encouragement and focus for people of faith to what matters the most and what grounds us during this time," she added. The songs have been recorded on an iPhone in the living room or one of the daughters' bedrooms. Eric said his wife started the hashtags A Song a Day challenge and Share Your Gifts as a way to get people to join the Baker family, and they have had a lot of people participate, either singly or with their families. Emily said all the songs have been Christian songs and worship songs, but one just telling people to trust in God during difficult times. "I've gotten so many messages from strangers on Facebook. I just got one Wednesday from a healthcare worker who I don't know, saying what an encouragement it's been to her each day to listen to our song at the end of the day after working 12 to 14 hour shifts. She said that everyone she knows in the healthcare industry right now is so stressed out. So many doctors and nurses have to be separated from their families, Emily said. She added that there was another girl on Facebook from Ohio who was in isolation because she wouldn't know her coronavirus test results until March 27th. Emily said the girl had all the symptoms, was cut off from her family, and was struggling with so much fear. Emily said the girl cried so hard when she listened to one of their songs, and that it takes all the energy she has to get up and take a shower. The music has helped her redirect her fear when she's so scared waiting for her test results, Emily said. It's been really humbling to be able to encourage people, she added. At first, the Bakers were going to record and post every night for 2 weeks. They may move to every couple of days to spread it out more. But it's definitely not something that we're going to just stop because it seems to be making such an impact on people, Emily said. The Bakers' 3 girls are 10-year-old Piper, 8-year-old Keller, and 5-year-old Harper. The older 2 girls are really enjoying getting to do it, and their teachers from school are commenting on their videos, and that makes them really happy, Emily said. It feels like they have a connection with their teacher, or their friends' parents are showing it to their friends, so I think they also enjoy that extra bit of connection. Baker said he thinks the family togetherness is going great. Being a professional musician and playing in so many different groups, I'm often working all day at Odessa College and then at rehearsal or performances every night. So often during the school year, my family time is quite limited during the week and on weekends. So in a strange way, this quarantine has brought us closer together and we're able to do artistic things, crafts, make these videos, play video games together. It's been, in an unusual way, a blessing for the Bakers to be able to get together. Although I know that for some, not going to work is a really difficult situation. So I want to make sure we're enjoying our time as a family, but still doing all we can to serve and bless other people who may not be in the same situation, Eric Baker said. He added that he wants to encourage other people to join them in the Song a Day Challenge or share your gifts. There are lots of ways that people can share their gifting. Some local hospitals desperately need medical masks, and they have patterns for people that know how to sew to be able to make medically approved masks, Eric said. Our encouragement would be to check out the requirements for that and get those patterns to make sure that they meet all of the health requirements. But if that's something you can help our local folks with, that would be a wonderful way to share your gifts, he added. If you know how to draw and you want to teach people how to do that while they're stuck at home, that could be a helpful thing. But any way that we as a community can give back or serve, safely, of course, and with all of the medical restrictions in place, then we want to encourage people to do that. We don't want to be the only people, and we've been encouraged that we're not. There are lots of groups that have been popping up on Facebook that are getting people to sing or dance or make music or make art. In a time where we as a society are being a little bit isolated, we can hopefully still feel like we're still together in all this, he added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.